Sorry about that. I forgot to start recording. The C portion is when people respect you as a leader, they follow you. So that's important because you don't want to get them confused. You don't want to think just because people admire you that they made you their leader, or because people love you, you are their leader. It's possible for people to both admire you and love you but not follow you. You have family members like that. They love you to death, but they're not doing anything you're trying to do. They don't listen when you try to plan. They don't respond when you speak, because admiration and love do not always equal leadership or followership. And so you really determine your leadership power and your leadership influence not by the number of people who admire you or the number of people who love you, but the number of people who respond to your vision, who respond to your ideas, who come alongside of you and partner with you when you have innovative ideas or aspirations for your company, for your business, or for your ministry. I talk to a lot of our preachers often. I know everybody's not preaching, but I talk to our preachers often and say, you know, you want to be careful that you don't, you know, get all big-headed or get really prideful because every Sunday somebody tells you you preach well or you sing well, or if you're in sales that, you know, you sell well, or you almost got me to buy it. That's admiration. You know, it's borderline love. I respect you in a love admiration way. You know people are following you, and you know you are a good leader when they respond to it. And that kind of gives you a second level of respect. A third attribute and quality that helps us define what respect is the idea of courage. The fill in the blank there is this demands being willing to stand alone. The second is do what's right. And that third blank is risk, failure, danger, and criticism. Again, when we talk about courage, it's when you know that you're willing to stand alone, it's when you do what's right, and it's when you risk failure, danger, and criticism. Respect is given to that woman and or to that man who makes up in their mind that this is the right thing to do, and I'll do it without compromise. I'll do it without bending my morals. I'll do it because I know it's right, even if you won't follow. It's kind of catch-22 because obviously you're not a leader if no one's following. But at the same time, people aren't going to follow you unless you start doing some things alone. I'm not quite sure if you get it. I'll say it again. So on the one hand, you're not a leader if no one follows. But there will always be a point in the life or the career of a true leader where you have to step out and take your first two or three steps alone with no one following you before you gain more followers. And, you know, right here, we haven't done it yet, but I'll probably pause and just kind of, you know, ask you to think about it. When was the last time you knew that there was something you could do? You know, and when I say something you can do, I'm saying maybe there was an idea you had, or maybe you knew that if your company, business, organization took a particular route, that the end would be disastrous, but instead of stepping up or speaking out, you just kind of went along. But when was the last time in whatever field you're in, or whatever new business you're trying to start, did you actually take the risk knowing that you could fail, knowing that it could be dangerous, knowing that people could verbally and emotionally, and then sometimes, you know, financially cut you off. They could criticize your step, but you still decided that I know this is right and you did it. For those of you who can put your finger on when that happened, the next question I was asked is, and how many followers did you gain as a result of your courage? Courage is never your ability to act absent of danger. Courage is your ability to move forward in the face of danger, in the face of ridicule, in the face of opposition. And courage is not just reserved for the soldier or for the gladiator or for the 300 men of Spartacus. No, courage is something that every leader has to have in their particular organization, because courage in and of itself earns you respect. The fourth quality or attribute is the attribute or quality of success. Success is an attractor. That fill in the blank right under number four, that success is an attractor. People are drawn to accomplishments. Success is an attractor. People are drawn to accomplishments. And then the two blank is advice is cheap. Results are priceless. Advice is cheap, but results are priceless. Here's the idea. That if you keep doing it right, you keep winning, you keep achieving, every month you keep getting Employee of the Month awards, eventually what people do is they give you respect because they see that even if they don't understand, even if they don't like how or what you're doing, it's working. And again, we have to kind of couple all of these together so there's no one that's better than the other. But success carries a lot of weight. It's hard to discredit a person or disrespect a person who's bringing results. Again, you know, I talk basketball not because I think everybody likes basketball. It's just common language for me. And I'll be honest, I never, never liked Kobe. Kobe Bryant couldn't do it. I didn't like his form. I thought he was awkward. I thought he was out of control. Got a friend, Edmund Jones, who always reminds me that you can't discredit him because he got rings. What he did for me is he helped me put in perspective that how I feel about him can't be valid because he has results that disprove how I feel. And a lot of times, you know, instead of you trying to verbally argue that you're right or verbally prove what you're going in or keep writing down and resubmitting your ideas, sometimes the ideas you have that are new and a little outlandish but probably will work, they'll be accepted if you are successful in the small thing. You know, oftentimes we want the big assignment, want the bigger office, want the next move. We want, you know, for ministry, you want God to do a great thing. You want to be the lead on whatever the company project is. And all of that sounds good and great. But the respect that you need to carry out those assignments comes in how successful you were with the small assignments. When I say small assignments, I want to be really practical. I'm talking about getting to places on time, showing up to your appointments before that scheduled appointments begins, carrying out basic everyday duties. If you have deadlines on Thursday, you may go in and say, hey, you know, can I have a little extra time? And you could get to Monday, but by virtue of the fact you asked for Monday, Monday is the extension. That's not the real deadline. Success comes in meeting the first deadline. Matter of fact, if it's due Thursday, turn it in Tuesday. So you have time to revamp it and revise it. So by Thursday, which is the deadline, it's foolproof. Success is one of the greatest attributes and qualities that helps you gain and earn respect. Now, again, let me digress. We're not talking about trying to do everything well. We're talking about being good at what you do. It's not in today's lesson, but one of the things that John Maxwell really drills is being good at what you do. Spend less energy, time, and resource trying to develop skills that you don't have. Get somebody else to do that. Find somebody who has strength in your weakness. What you do is you pour all of your time and energy in being the best at what you do. And if you become the best at what you do, then your success is not measured in your ability to do somebody else's job, carry out somebody else's assignment, finish somebody else's task. Your success is going to be built on how you're able to do well what you're supposed to do and what you're already skilled and talented at. That's the fourth quality when we talk about respect. The fifth quality we talk about respect is loyalty. This is a dying attribute. Most of us want instant gratification. Loyalty, again, it's a dying attribute. This is on our sheet. And most of us want instant gratification. But loyalty requires steadfastness. But what loyalty does for us as respect, loyalty almost works like a credit card. You know, loyalty points. For instance, if you get Panera Bread. Panera Bread has a little card, and every time you go to Panera Bread, they swipe your card. They give you free things because you're loyal. They understand that you could have eaten anywhere. Matter of fact, you could have got cookies, biscuits, bread, chips, smoothies. You could have got water a lot cheaper somewhere else. But what they do is they reward you, or let me say this, they show respect to you because instead of going to other places, you came there. And here's the idea. You get more points based on how many times you come, which means you do not get a bucket full of rewards points, even if you come one time and get a big order. No, that's not loyalty. Loyalty is not how well you did the one project or carried out the one assignment or the fact that you stuck with your boss or the supervisor or the director on that one project. Loyalty is earned over time. Loyalty is you know, he's been with me this year, last year. She was right there. When I got sick and I couldn't come in, they were there to carry the load. And loyalty is that long-term quality. When promotions are given, when raises are being thought about, when new positions open up, people will look for the respected person and think, who has been loyal to our company, who has been loyal to me as a supervisor, director, or leader, who's been there when everybody else jumped ship? Again, instant gratification is something we get. We talked about that in the law process. But respect is earned because you've just been around. I'm always laughing at me because there's some things that I'm just loyal to. I'm just loyal. Like I understand that Nike is probably not the best athletic gear for my new sport. I'm golfing now, right? It's, you know, it's not. I mean, there are only two real good Nike golfers. I understand that. I understand that Nike makes the worst golf equipment ever. But I'm loyal. I've been loyal to Nike. Just because. It's in my head. Could I do something else? Yes, I could, but I'm loyal. And it didn't start this year or last year. That loyalty started when I was in elementary school, and I had a cousin that I looked up to that loved Nike, and because he loved Nike, I loved Nike, and now it becomes what I'm loyal to. It was something developed over years. And the question we ask for you is, who are you loyal to? You know, it was said earlier, we said it probably twice already, that money is not the best motivator for any real move or action or what you're going to do. Obviously, you have to have it, you know. But who are you loyal to? What would it take for you to leave your job or shift your perspective to another person or jump on ship with some other employee? How easy is it for you to just bend? Are you often moved because you think hooking up with this person may give you a better chance than the person you're already with, and so you just shift easily? Now, again, today's not totally about loyalty. The problem with that is that every moment you shift, you change, you move, you try something different, what it does is it begins to decrease your respect because you have no place of loyalty. Now, you don't have to be loyal to everybody all the time, but you want to make sure that there are some times that you are loyal enough to understand that loyalty is a part of your respect building, and you need respect as an attribute for true leadership. Here are a couple of ways that we can actually measure our level of respect. You can measure your level of respect, one, by looking at the people you attract. Who chooses to follow you? And when we say who, I mean, you can look at that, with a lot of different dynamics. It could be who's following you, and you could group them into financially. What financial group do they fit in? Or what race of people follow you? What gender of people follow you? Which people in your office follow you? Because it's contrary to popular belief, real good leaders attract other leaders. And again, I don't want anybody to feel bad because, you know, everybody has to start somewhere. But real leaders will attract other leaders, and leaders will both give respect and follow them. Different from the leader who only attracts the low self-esteem coworker or the low self-esteem employee, employer, who really don't know what they're doing and they're just looking for anybody to hang on to. Now, again, if that's what you've attracted so far, that's not a problem. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're wrong, doesn't mean you're off, doesn't mean you're behind. But what we are trying to do is get you to understand that you can measure your level of both respect and leadership influence by the type of people, the number of people, and which people in your office follow you. So maybe that's personal for you, but you want to definitely, you know, take that type of eval for yourself and ask, who is it that's following me? And the second measurement for your respect level is, how do people respond when you ask for commitment or change? Don't confuse it. It's not how do people respond when you ask them to do what's already their job anyway. Well, because leaders don't have to encourage people to do what they're already doing. Leaders, this is my personal definition, leaders are people who take others to places they cannot get to on their own. Leaders are people who take others to places they cannot get to on their own. That's what I believe leadership is. And if in fact that's leadership, then change or committing to something that they hadn't already put their stake in is really where the leader's needed. I don't really need leadership qualities to get you to carry out something that's already on your job description. What I'm asking you to do is something that's over and beyond your job description that may cause you to have to work after hours or come in on a Saturday or give a little more financially or sacrifice some of your checks so that we can put it towards this project. And when you're able to cause and create change in a person's life or change in their everyday routine, at that moment, you can see leadership. I understand, again, that, you know, everybody's in different contexts. I think one of the greatest things that happens in the Bible is we get these leaders who are tasked with taking people to places that they've never been before. You know, Moses had to take the children of Israel out of Egypt into what he called the Promised Land, but they had never been there before. Joshua has to take, you know, people over the Jordan River, and all their life they had been, you know, on this other side. And so one of the things I think we're often assigned as leaders is the job of getting people to commit to things that they don't want to and they would not have thought of, and also make some type of change. You know, some of you are going to be selling people products. You know, the core of selling, the core concept to sell somebody something is to convince them that they need it even though they didn't already have it. You know, some of you selling homes, some of you selling health products, some of you will be selling, you know, jewelry or makeup. Some of you are evangelistic, you're selling Jesus. What you're doing is you're saying, hey, I have this product and you need it. Now, obviously, you didn't know you needed it because you don't have it already. And just because you don't have it already doesn't mean you need it. So I'm now going to use both my respect level and my leadership influence to convince you that you need this change in your life. You need to eat better, or you need to switch from this makeup, this jewelry, or this line of work to that. You need to, you know, you've been working in this office, but what I'd like for you to do is try this other position out. I know what you got your degree in. I know what you've already done. I know what awards you have. But based on what we're trying to do, I need to see if you can move here. And here's what happens. The person is not going to respond to you if they don't respect you. They're not going to respond if you haven't been loyal. They're not going to respond if you haven't in some way been successful. They're not going to respond if you haven't shown them courage. Because you can't ask them to step out and do something when you haven't stepped out and done anything. They're not going to respond if you don't already have some skill set. And so you always want to make sure that you kind of understand that leadership is actually going to do those things. It's going to make some type of change or call somebody to commitment. Okay. That really is that number six. I didn't talk about that one. It's value added to others. I think the fill in the blank is this perhaps is the greatest source of respect when you add value to others. And I wanted to leave that to go with measuring your level of respect. So when we look at how do you respond when you ask for commitment or change, your ability to help people commit and people change is how you add value to them. You do something with them that causes them to do something for themselves. Again, you do something with them that causes them to do something for themselves. Because there are a lot of things you can do for people. Without doubt, you can do a lot for them. But at the end of the day, they didn't have to point at you. Real leaders help people do things for themselves. So at the end of the day, they feel better about themselves. So when they look at you, they don't say, you did this for me. They look at you and say, you make me better. You add value to me. You maximize my potential. And so that's really the idea of this first law, or this seventh law, the first one we're talking about tonight, and that is the law of respect. A couple of things that we're going to ask you to do that on the bottom of your worksheet, write a purpose statement. You know, practice this on your own, which really is a self-eval. You got to go back and think, okay, how do I show respect? How have I been successful? What are my raw skills and talents? Right. We're moving on to law eight. Law eight is the law of intuition. The law of intuition. Leaders evaluate everything with the leadership bias. There is this intuitiveness that you have as a leader. I know it because you're on this call. You take time out every Monday to listen to a lecture and listen to someone talk to you about things that you probably already know, you just needed either a reminder or maybe you needed someone to confirm or affirm the fact that you are just different from some of the other people that are in your office or in your immediate circle. And tonight's Law 8 speaks to that very distinction you have. That is that you are intuitive. Now, that first statement really kind of helps summarize it because it says not everyone is intuitive in the area of leadership, but everyone possesses intuition. In fact, everyone is intuitive in their area of strength. The law of intuition depends on much more than just the facts. So here's intuition. Intuition in leadership is you just have a natural knack for knowing what's next, for knowing what's cutting edge, for knowing what our office, organization, business, church, ministry should do before everybody else does it. There are no stats. You don't always have enough facts to prove it. Something in you just always knows how to fix it. When emergencies come up, you know, you plan the conference, you plan the business meeting, you plan the seminar, you guys have the company picnic, you have the ministry assignment set up, everything is running smoothly, something goes wrong after everything was running smoothly, people come to you and you quickly fix it, things go on, and those who attend it don't even know about it. Everybody else was panicked, but you are a leader, and intuitively you were able to just kind of sift through it. That's something that leaders have to have. And when we talk about the law of intuition, we're really talking about your ability to act on what you feel. There are many people, and I found this particularly in ministry, that will look at all of the facts and will panic. Or they'll look at all the facts, and if they're given the right facts, they can make great predictions on what's going to happen. The intuitive leader makes that same prediction without knowing the facts, without having the stats, without having anything concrete. The fill in the blank there is it is fact plus instinct plus conditions. One more time, it is fact plus your instinct plus your conditions. In other words, I'm looking at what we actually have, but then I feel something about what's going on, and I'm looking at the current condition. I'm looking at, you know, how good things are, how bad things are, how much we have, how much we don't have. And all of those things create for us what is a very intuitive leadership style. What I'd like to do is just kind of pause for a moment and play what is some of John Maxwell talking, just about a five-minute clip on his ideas of law of intuition. Obviously, it's his law, so we have great information. So if you would now, just kind of listen to John Maxwell talk to us about the law of intuition.
Law number 8 is the law of intuition, which basically says leaders evaluate everything with a leadership bias. Now, because you are responsible to coach and teach others and pass on what we teach to you, I want to be very honest with you about this law. This is a very difficult law to teach. It's a very difficult law to explain. I've had the privilege of teaching the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership in dozens of countries around the world, literally hundreds of times to tens of thousands of people. And trust me, this law, the law of intuition, and the law of timing are the two most difficult laws to teach and pass on. And let me explain to you the reason why. The law of intuition favors the gifted leader. Let me explain it this way. When people say to me that they're not intuitive, I know that they don't understand how intuition really works because everybody is intuitive. But catch this, they're intuitive in the area of their giftedness. And so therefore, when a person is not intuitive in the area of leadership, in other words, they don't naturally kind of understand what's happening around them leadership-wise, it's because they're not a natural gifted leader. You see, this law, the law of intuition and the law of timing, greatly favor the natural, gifted, quote, born leader. Now, I'm very intuitive in the area of leadership. In fact, I can remember when I lived in San Diego, I would do a lot of traveling and I would come back to the organization maybe for the weekend. And my executive leader would talk to me about issues as I would come back, or on the phone we would talk about them during the week. And I would be able to read between the lines and very quickly size up the situation. And many times I would look at him and say, Dan, check this out, or I think it's over here. And I just knew what to do. I knew what to do because I am a natural gifted leader, and I'm intuitive in the area of my giftedness. Now, this intuition that I have in leadership does not follow through in my life in most every other area. I'm not intuitive at all in the area of color, or I'm not intuitive at all in a lot of things that have nothing to do with leadership. In fact, I consider myself quite slow. Now, the reason I tell you this is because when you start coaching and teaching people, you have to understand that this law favors the naturally gifted leader. If they're not naturally gifted, remember when I talked to you about the law of navigation and when I talked to you about it wasn't one of my strengths? What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to help them in their inner circle surround themselves by someone that is a natural, intuitive leader. I often say when I talk about leaders that the natural leaders, they see more than others see, and they see before others see. That's very true. When it comes to leadership, I can see the big picture quicker than almost anybody around me. In fact, to be honest with you, I have to work on my patience because a lot of times I'm thinking, when are they going to see the whole picture instead of their own little segment? And I almost always see it quicker than anyone else. And I'm waiting in the room for everyone, quote, to catch on. Why? Because it's playing to my strength. It's playing to my giftedness. Leadership is my gift. In fact, let me just put it this way. If you're in a room and there's a decision to be made and you're the last one to catch on, that doesn't mean you're slow or that you're not very smart. It just means that you probably aren't an intuitive, naturally gifted leader. It's okay. So the best way that we can help people when we teach this law is by helping them understand that it is a law that favors the natural gifted leader. That's okay. And they may not be that. And that's okay. Now what they need to do is they need to complement and complete themselves by getting somebody that is a natural gifted leader. And in decision making, they need to continually listen and learn from the naturally gifted leader, because almost always they'll catch on quicker and they'll see it bigger and clearer than what they see. Again, remember and understand the laws of leadership, including this law. You don't have to be good in all of them. If you're a coach, you don't have to be a 10 in all of them. In fact, if you think you're a 10 in all the laws of leadership, you shouldn't be coaching. You need therapy. I can tell you right now, you've got other issues to deal with. That's okay. That's okay. Just because you coach somebody doesn't mean that you know more than they know in every area. Just because you're a speaker doesn't mean that you're an authority upon every word that you say. It's okay to sometimes realize you need people around you. And the best thing we can do for ourselves, the best thing we can do for others, is help them to sense where they are. Evaluate where they are. In fact, I would suggest this. In going through the coaching, as you go through the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, as you sit down with your client, help them to look at themselves, and from a 1 to a 10, 1 being poor, 10 being very excellent, help them to evaluate themselves on each one of the laws until they pretty well kind of figure out the laws they do well, the laws they do fairly well, and then the laws that they do average. And then help them to understand they don't have to carry the ball. They're the quarterback. They just need to know who to get the ball to.
That was John, just kind of sharing a little bit. And one of the reasons I wanted you to hear that is because he said a couple of things I thought really interesting. One, he says that he admittedly acknowledges to those around him that he is not great at everything. That's important. I think one of the things that you'll find with the law of intuition is that when you are intuitive, you often, because you catch on to things faster, because you automatically know what to do, it can cause great frustration with people around you. You'll look at them, you know, you won't say it out loud, but you'll speak to them in demeaning ways. You will think less of other people. And the problem with that, many problems, but the number one problem with that tonight is, you know, law 7. That is, you start to lose respect because you aren't giving them respect, because what you know is there are things that can be done. Intuitively, you know. You don't know why, you don't know how, but you know that there's something else that could be done. Well, they may not always get that. Again, let me remind you, that's why you're the leader. That's why you're being asked to step out, come up front, speak out, do the things nobody else does, because you do have some intuitiveness. We're going to finish going through that worksheet, but let me say this also about intuitiveness. Because you are intuitive, you have to be courageous enough just to do some things. You got to be courageous enough to do it when you don't have all of the stats, when everything does not lean in your favor, when the majority is not with you. Even for some of you, at the cost of losing some things that you had previously deemed valuable, you got to be willing to trust, you know, what some may say is your gut feeling. You know, for those who are doing ministry in church, you know, you'll say it's the Spirit, and many times it is. Not every time. Many times it is. However, whatever it is you call it, you got to trust, know, and believe that you have an uncharted, a non-scripted something about you that knows what's happening. Trust it and go with it. As we look at the last two last fill in the blanks just for that particular worksheet, I would talk about the fact that if you're going to live the law of intuition, you have to answer a couple of questions. Know who you are, because who you are determines what you see. Again, for those of you who are natural leaders, you know, when you see things, you automatically go for it. I know I've had situations, particularly in our ministry, you know, where people have been doing things in the middle of a ministry context or a service, and they'll come and say, something broke or it's not working. As a leader, my first response is, so how are we going to fix it? And they're saying, well, we can't fix it. No, we got to be able to fix it. Like, because as a leader, I don't ever have a problem. Leaders don't have obstacles. Every challenge is an opportunity. I'm just trying to figure out how it's going to work. We've had trouble with our mic systems the last 3 weeks. You know, our sound guy, you know, he'll wave at me, shake his head, and say, they don't work. But no, it's got to work. Something's going to work. And so after I ask enough questions how to make it work, different from why doesn't it work, what happens is it begins to initiate the intuitiveness in others. And so the musician will jump off the keyboard and he'll plug in an old wire mic into just one amp. It gives us some sound. It may not have been what we started with. The idea is that intuitiveness in you breathes intuitiveness in others that they didn't really know existed. Because non-leaders or those who are essentially followers will settle and compromise at, well, this is what I have, so this is what it will be. But the leader always carves road in the middle of forests. The leader will always find a log and make a rowboat to get across the water. The leader will jump with leaves on his or her arms and try to fly, and that's what it takes to get to the other side. And that happens because you are intuitive. When you understand intuitiveness, you understand there are at least three levels of it that Maxwell talks about. The first level of leadership intuition is those who just naturally understand leadership. The second level is those who can be nurtured to understand leadership. And then, of course, the third is those who will never understand leadership. And, of course, you know, you never want to say that. You want to give everybody an opportunity. But let's be honest. Some people just aren't going to get it for many reasons. Maybe they don't want to. It's not just who they are. But that's okay, because if you are the leader and they're a follower in this situation, you know, time may turn, life may shift, where in another area you become the follower, they become the leader, which, again, is why Law 7 is so important. As we talked about respect, you want to give that respect, because you never want to get to a place where ties do change and you need to follow, but because you haven't given respect, they won't even allow you to come along. You know, it's often been said that even the CEO and the janitor have to work together. The CEO can have a Fortune 500 company, but if he ever loses his keys, the janitor is the only one that's going to be able to let him in. You don't want to ever get to a place where you cut people off because you fail to understand that their intuition rests in their area of expertise. Those are the first two laws tonight. You know, we talked about Law 7. We talked about Law 8. Law 7 is the law of respect. Law 8 is the law of intuition. The last thing we want to look at is this law of magnetism. For those of you who are filling in the blanks, let me just say at the top of page 4, it talks about developing intuition by developing your thinking. A couple things it talks about: researching projects, rendering a plan, and rehearsing a play. It's a nice quote there for those of you who may not have that worksheet in front of you, one by Napoleon Hill. It says, once you have a burning desire and you live in purpose with that desire, decisions come quickly and easily, and seldom, if ever, will you change your mind. Again, Napoleon Hill says, once you have a burning desire and you live in purpose with that desire, decisions will come quickly and easily, and seldom, if ever, will you change your mind. In other words, you'll move on what you feel without any regret, without any hesitation. And again, you do that by researching projects, rendering the plan, rehearse the play. The more you do that, the more experience you have, and the more intuitive you become. The bottom of that worksheet, I'm not going to talk about it, but I do want to make sure you have the benefit of filling those blanks in. Because the difference is intuition, which is being in the right place at the right time with the right awareness. The difference between a leader and a follower, the difference is intuition. And intuition is being in the right place at the right time with the right awareness. And again, you'll get there because it's something natural about who you are. Go with it. Our last thought tonight, and I will try to do it in about 8 minutes. We'll use the last 2 minutes to just kind of discuss the coaching certification concept. But our last law is the law of magnetism. Magnetism is who you are, is who you attract. The law of magnetism is who you are, is who you attract. Now, we have to really look at this, juxtapose what we've already talked about. One, we talked about the idea that when we look at both respect and intuition, oftentimes you can determine your leadership effectiveness by who follows you. Now, when we talk about magnetism, we're not just talking about your followers. We're talking about the people that both admire you, love you, and respect you. So that's what we talked about in that seventh law, for those who came on the call a little bit later. In the seventh law, we shared the information that as a leader, you're going to have people who admire you. They just like what you do, love you. It's a little beyond like because they're willing to take your downfall and your rising. But then there's people who respect you because they just understand that what you do is successful. When we talk about the law of magnetism, we're really talking about identifying who you are attracting. No matter what field you're in, no matter what your position is, you attract something. Everybody, I understand, is not going to be out front or out in the public where you're touching and talking to people, but you got to ask yourself, what type of people are affected or are changed or are handled by the work I do? And a couple of categories you can kind of look at this law of magnetism. One is you look at the different generations. That first fill in the blank one is generations. Most organizations or groups, companies, churches, and even departments attract individuals of the similar age. Now, this is why this is good, just kind of put it in context. It's good to know who you attract because you might want to attract somebody different than the people you actually are attracting. If you've never taken a real self-evaluation of the people that are attracted by your business, organization, your skill, your church, or your ministry, if you've never really stopped to say, okay, who's actually using our product, then there's a chance that you will deem your business or organization unsuccessful simply because you're not bringing in the people you want. It may not be that you're unsuccessful. It may be that you're just bringing in a group that's different than the group that you targeted. So in order to target a group that's different from you, you know, we got to go back to, you know, law two. You've got to actually bring in people that aren't like you. So, again, the law of magnetism says, one, you know, you identify the generation because oftentimes you attract the people that are of your age. And let me just toss this out. A lot of times I know you may try to act an age younger than you are, but it won't work. Because even when you try to attract the age younger than you are or older than you are, people know what age group you're really in. You don't have to tell them. You don't have to write it down. You don't have to flash your ID. There is just something natural about who you are. If you're an 80s baby, you're an 80s baby. If you're a 70s baby, you're a 70s baby. You either got a fro or you're bald-headed right now. And you can try to act older, younger, but there's something that is just natural about you that speaks of your generation, how you think about things, how you look at things, how you handle things. So are there a few people that can, you know, live life cross-generational? Yeah, definitely. You know, there are some older guys, some older women who may dress younger, who, you know, may build some type of external appearance to attract a different market. But for the most part, you got to be honest and understand that you will often draw to you and attract to you the same generation you're in. The second thing we look at when we talk about magnetism is background. So the first one is generation, the second is background. The personal circumstances and experiences that shape somebody's life, you know, their ethnicity, their social origins, their upbringing, education, work experiences. All of these are background issues. So I'm a tech nerd by heart, just, you know, talking about me. And so naturally, people who like technology, you know, they'll come, we'll talk, we'll share. It's automatic, no matter what context I'm in, because of a similar background. Here's a good thing about background. The more things you've done, the more places you've been, the more experiences you've had, the more people you can attract if you're willing to share your background. If this were a church context, I know it's not, this is why I would probably say even some of the things that you consider to be a failure or embarrassing can really be used to work out for your good and attract people that other people have marginalized. Yeah, think about it. If you were embarrassed by it, or you thought that it was something devastating that should never be talked about, there's a great chance that there's some other people that feel the same way. And if you come out and speak about those ills that have happened in your life or mistakes that you've made at your company or on your job, if you're willing to speak about those things, then you will isolate yourself as the one person that attracts all of the people that have made those same mistakes or had those same hurts or made, you know, had those same failures in life, and you begin to build a followership different from everybody else. What we often try to do, particularly when we talk about background, is we try to highlight the things we think people like, and then, you know, that draws them. And it does. Problem is, you're just now in a group with everyone else. You got to kind of pull up some of the background about yourself that draws the people that are in similar situations. Again, just kind of sharing as an example, one of the things that I teach our preachers and I do myself is whenever I have the opportunity or privilege to travel and preach, I always look at where I am so that I can create, you know, some type of commonality. Now, again, I may not be able to have background with everyone, but I may shout out, you know, a fraternity or a sorority. I may talk about, you know, the school I attended or the sport I play. I may share about my family. I may share, you know, the experience I had when my car broke down. All of these are experiences that create my background. If you could picture background, background is the vast image of experiences that you've had. They're painted on a canvas, and you really just stand on the easel. You're not even on the picture. You're really just standing in front of the easel, and then there's a big canvas behind you that have pictures of everything you've ever done, every place you've ever been, every experience you've ever had. All of that for you is background. We're not just talking about employment. We're not just talking about, you know, education. We're not talking about the things off of your resume. We're talking about every experience. And the more you're willing to share those experiences, the more magnetic you become. So once we have generation two, we have background. Another thing we have when we talk about magnetism is your attitude. The personal circumstances and experiences that shape somebody's life, the way a person views something or tends to behave towards it attracts people. So if you're always negative, you're going to attract negative people. If you're pessimistic, chances are all the pessimistic people who don't think they have a chance, they're going to come to you. The opposite is also true. If you're always hopeful, if you always have some hope, if you're always talking about what could happen, what might happen, or what should have taken place, there's a chance that you will attract those type of people. And again, you want to just be mindful of your attitude. When we talk about living out this law of magnetism, a couple of things you want to be mindful of. One, you want to take time to establish and review, evaluate yourself personally. So those blanks there are for you, not just your business, not your organization, not your church, but you should have your own mission statement. A mission statement is what I'm about. Who am I? You should also have your own vision statement. The vision statement is, what will I do next? In 1 to 5 years, What's next? And let me just kind of give clarity to those. The difference between mission and vision. Vision is the overall, right? What the overall idea. Mission is how I actually accomplish it. Vision is I want to save the world. Vision is I want to bring technology into every home. Vision is I want seniors and young people to live in harmony together. That's the big vision. But the mission is how you're going to do it, which, again, talks about who you are. Like, how am I going to bridge the gap between these generations? How am I going to save the world? How am I going to put technology in every home? And the mission statement is a combination of who you are, because you cannot act outside of who you are, because even when you track people in your weaknesses, you have to identify what your weaknesses are. Okay? The third idea when we talk about living out this law is understanding core values and what do you believe. And again, there has to be some balance between your ability to stand strong in what you believe, but at the same time being sensitive enough to respect what others believe that may disagree with what you do. There's some things that you just stand hard on, and you should stand hard. You should have some no-compromise ideas, but at the same time, you want to be sensitive to what other people have and what other people are thinking about. So when we talk about magnetism, you must first identify your core values. You want to have a social contract? How will I act, and who will I be accountable to? It's a social contract. Here's some things I'm just not going to do. It's giving yourself rules, deadlines. It's telling yourself this is something I will do, this is as far as I will go, and it's letting some other real human person know that so they can help keep you accountable. Once you get those things, your mission statement, your vision statement, your core values, and your social contract, what you want to then do is start internalizing it. You know, write it down, read it every day, talk to yourself about it. Hang it up on walls, put it on the refrigerator, places you're going to go, so that it becomes a part of who you are. You know, we say it all the time that, you know, this coaching network is designed to help maximize your potential. That's not something that I made up. It was something that, you know, we started back in 98, 99, when Crown Ministries first was birthed. Our goal was out of the scripture, Hebrews 2:8-9, on the mission to see Jesus. And the whole goal then was to help people find the best in themselves. It is maximizing potential. So, you know, when you hear it, when we say it, we're not just coining the term to brand the business or to brand the coaching or the brand organization. It has been internalized where that is what we do. That is my life goal, to help maximize the potential in someone else. Two, you got to live up to it. You know, so after you internalize it, then you do it. Three, you want to look for people who are in harmony. Find other people who have that same mindset or would like to share in your vision or your goal or your assignment. On your job, same thing. You know, everybody may be in different departments, may have different assignments, but there can be some core values that you share, and you want to be able to connect and partner with those so that you can get those things done. To fill in the blanks there, I find people who believe what you believe but think different thoughts. Again, you know, be strong at what you do. Let them be strong at what they do. So find people who believe what you believe but think different thoughts, because you do know there's always more than one way to skin a cat. And if that's true, there's more than one way to fulfill, carry out, or accomplish the tasks and assignments that you have. Okay. Those are a couple things that we want to just kind of review tonight when we look at Law 7, Law 8, and Law 9. And again, you know, I hope you guys are enjoying the calls. When I say enjoying, grabbing something you can use, hearing something that maybe you haven't thought about, and then sharing it with someone else, because, again, you know, you begin the process of maximizing potential when you're able to get out what's placed in you. I want to just kind of close our conference call tonight. It's a little after 9 o'clock, 9:03. You can give me just two more minutes, 9:04 now. Give me 1 minute. I want to just kind of review what our coaching certification is. And, again, thank everybody for your time. Thank everybody for kind of being a part. In addition to these calls, a couple things are going to happen as we get ready to transition to, I believe, July 6th, July 7th, which will be the last call. One of the things that will happen is we will start a new mastermind, and our new mastermind will be on a specific teaching, one that you choose. Again, we'll get a consensus, and maybe we'll have two different masterminds going on. But after we finish these calls, you know, we will have another mastermind with different curriculum provided for you. And so that'll be the next thing that will come up. However, November, we're going to kick off what will be a coaching certification. The coaching certification allows you to host calls like the one you're on now. It would allow you to go through and teach what are the 12 principles of Crown Ministries. We'll get through those a little bit later. It will provide you the opportunity to teach a few other curriculums that we've already purchased. But what it really does is it gives you intense training on coaching, sales, speaking, and marketing. There's a relationship component there because, again, we want you to be able to relate to people. But what it'll do is it'll give you intense training on coaching, sales, speaking, and marketing. That training will come in an additional conference call. And so we'll have two conference calls tonight. You'll have your regular mastermind call, but then you also have your coaching training and certification call. It will be a host of online videos and worksheets that you'll be asked to watch and fill out. And so it'll be like an online university. So if anyone is interested in actually becoming a coach, again, as a coach, you create your own business. You're able to share in these calls with us, but then you're also able to start your own mastermind. It becomes a side business for you, if you like, or it becomes maybe just something you do to hone your personal speaking skills, to build your own followership for a later business that you want to start. Again, everybody's not going to do it. We understand that. However, we do want to provide that opportunity. Again, with the caliber of each person that's on the call, I know what you can do. I know the potential that's in you, and we do want you to know that you aren't limited to just listening. We really want to have your input. We want you to be able to share this with someone else. So just know that that's coming up in November. I'll be emailing some more information about it. There are about 12 and a half hours of coaching videos, 6.5 hours of speaking videos, 9 hours on sales, 10 hours on marketing. And that's the information you'll get. It'll be yours for a lifetime that you'll be able to share and take with you to help you in whatever area of life you're in. Again, this is our mastermind on Laws 7, 8, and 9. I do want to say thank you for all of the participants that called in and at the beginning of this call just kind of shared what you have been learning. We are after the 9 o'clock hour. I want to be as true to our time as possible, so we won't have anyone else do it. But I am looking at who's online now. And so next week, what you will do, again, is we'll start off our conference call just by getting some introductions, finding out what vocations we're connected to so our networking can begin. And I hope that you're really gaining something from our time together. You all have a great night. Expect an email by Wednesday with some more information, with the recording of tonight's call, also with that fill-in-blank answers from last week's call. Everyone have a great night.